This podcast was specifically created for Distress and Crisis Ontario organizations and their volunteer responders to provide training and educational assistance on a variety of topics. As information evolves and changes, these podcasts are meant to offer ongoing support with the goal of updating them on an ongoing basis. We thank the volunteer responders and the contributors to this podcast. Please visit our website, dcontario.org, for more information and how to access free mental health services. Thank you.
Hi there, I'm Brenda, your host for this week's episode. I am currently a BSW student completing my placement at Distress and Crisis Ontario and a proud African Canadian. In this episode of the Mental Health and Systemic Racism series, I'll be interviewing the Honorable Bartosz Chagar, Member of Parliament for the Riding of Waterloo and Minister of Diversity and Inclusion and Youth. I hope that through these podcasts that they will be a source of education to know about what is going on in our society and what community supports and resources are available. Happy listening. Hi Bartosz, and welcome to today's interview. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Brenda. Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to this opportunity to exchange with you.
Yes, thank you for taking time out of your day to answer my interview questions. So the first one is, can you please tell us about what you do in the community and your role as a Minister of Diversity and Inclusion and Youth?
So, within the Waterloo region, I should first say I'm a member of Parliament for the riding of Waterloo. And for this riding, it is the first time since Confederation that we've had a woman elected as the member of Parliament for the riding of Waterloo. And as someone who is born and raised in this region, I'm the child of immigrants. My parents came from India in the early 70s. So we've really seen this community grow. And in 2019, when I was elected for the second time, and I'm really grateful to the constituents of the riding of Waterloo for putting their confidence in me, the Prime Minister asked me to take on responsibilities as a Minister of Diversity and Inclusion and Youth. And so we've not had this position at the cabinet table prior to this. So we've had ministers of multiculturalism, we've had other creations and versions of it, but diversity and inclusion in youth was a conscious decision by the Prime Minister because we believe in an inclusive Canada. So yes, we want to celebrate our diversity, but we also want to ensure that these voices are part of the decision-making table, represented at the decision-making table, and how do we ensure that we create more inclusive policies that will actually deliver better outcomes. So my job is to listen, to engage, and to actually look at who is being represented and who's not being represented, bring people in who are not being represented, and then surround myself with a diversity of perspectives and opinions and experiences, because no community has one voice.
Yeah.
There's always a diversity of perspectives. So how do we actually have respectful dialogue, and how do we ensure that the 36 people that came together to negotiate Confederation are not still making the decisions today? So it's to actually help make sure every decision our government makes has the necessary lenses to ensure that every Canadian can realize their potential.
Yeah, that's so awesome that you're the first woman and that this is a new initiative that's been started, because yeah, I feel like as we move forward, there are a lot of stories that get swept under the rug that we don't hear about. And it's important to hear different people's perspectives and making sure that, yeah, we're Canada and that everyone should feel included, and not just feel included, but actually be included in everything that goes on. Yeah.
And Brenda, that is like the exact spot, like should and feel and be.
Yeah.
And I think just being able to acknowledge the inequities that exist within our system. Mm-hmm. And then what do we do about it, right?
Yeah.
So there's not one single law that's going to change everything, but mm-hmm. each of us can change and do better. Each of us can create more space and really create an inclusive country. So Canada is a great country. It has given me and my family so much. Many people have succeeded. But the reality is that certain populations are being held back and left on the sidelines. Yeah. And we've seen that when it comes to gender. We've seen that when it comes to Black Canadians. We've seen that when it comes to Indigenous communities. And the list goes on. People with disabilities. And so it's really about how do we look at that we've got an amazing population and that we can, and that's why right now is such an important time because we can build back even better mm-hmm. and consciously inclusive because we have to change the way we're doing things because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So why not do it even better?
Mm-hmm. That's very true. So moving on to the next question, in what ways have you seen systemic racism impact the mental health of minorities?
So I would say, especially right now, mm-hmm. And it's always been evident, but COVID-19, this pandemic has impacted all Canadians. It has impacted the world, but it has disproportionately impacted certain segments of society.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what this pandemic has done is shine a light on those inequities, on those cracks, however we want to say it. And we've seen this not just because of the video footage, and I don't mean just south of the border, but I mean in Canada. And my focus is on Canada. Mm-hmm. In Canada, systemic racism exists. Mm-hmm. Discrimination exists. There are inequities within every institution and agency. And how do we have that honest conversation
mm-hmm.
and do something about it?
Yeah.
And so your whole comment about sweeping it under the rug, it's going to be exposed at some point. And right now it is at the forefront. And that's why I think this portfolio that I'm occupying is actually even more relevant. In 2019, people were saying, like, why does this exist? And it's virtue signaling. No.
Mm-hmm.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau knew it well before it was highlighted and, you know, put at the forefront like it is. So where do we see mental health issues? We see it within the data. We know that when it comes to the services that are available, they are not created by community for community. We know that there are cultural sensitivities that are not considered. And so what is our government doing? Because I am about outcomes and I'm about taking chances and course correcting and, you know, trying to do better and be better. And I believe in evidence-based decision-making. So we're collecting disaggregated data to find out who is accessing our programs, who is succeeding in those programs, what do the outcomes look like so that we can actually look at where we need to respond.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to mental health supports, our government invested, like in budget 2018 as an example, $10 million to the public health agency to address mental health programs in Black Canadian communities.
Yeah.
And so Black Canadian communities, and we looked to make sure the boards were actually representative of communities. We made sure that the leadership was representative because communities know best what communities need,
mm-hmm.
but it has to be culturally sensitive, sensitive and informed programs that will work. But
mm-hmm.
if you look at the way, once again, Confederation was negotiated, if it's those same people making decisions for the diversity that exists in Canada today, the outcomes won't be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the decision-making table has to reflect the diversity of the country, has to reflect the populations we are trying to support and work with, and at minimum has to be informed by lived experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can go on with a list of other things we're doing, but that's one example.
Thank you so much for sharing. Could you also illuminate or share one story or example of how systemic racism has affected your mental health or someone you know?
So I would just say I'm born and raised in this community and I'm so grateful to to the community. The community and the Waterloo region I grew up in, for the most part, was really about, you know, communities raising children and communities lifting each other up. And so, you know, my teachers were massively important to me. The volunteer opportunities that I had, my father's been my backbone, and we really tried to contribute to the community that's been good to us. But if you look around, look at the decision-making table, look at what our elected officials look like, look at our teachers
mm-hmm.
and so forth within communities. And if they are not representative of the individuals that they are representing or teaching or hiring, and the list goes on, then that is where we see those concrete examples. Growing up, I never saw elected officials that looked like me. Mm-hmm. So I never saw that I could be one. And it was in 2014 where I remember my mentor, a dear friend, Andrew Sledge, the late Honorable Andrew Sledge, who I worked for, said, "You should run." And I said, "There's just no way I could win in a riding like Waterloo." And he was like, "Yes, you can." And I said, "Because, you know, the systemic issues actually make you believe that you are inadequate and that you aren't, that you don't belong and that you don't fit in. And we do this and we continue to do this. And that's where we perpetuate these inequities, and it's all throughout." So there is a personal example of believing that I was not able to. Luckily, I had amazing people around me. Andrew had come to Canada as a refugee at 10 years old from Hungary. And on the 50th anniversary of the revolution, Andrew Sledge was a member of parliament for the riding of Waterloo and actually represented Canada in Hungary.
Oh, wow.
And these are the amazing kind of stories that our country is able to share if we actually remove people from the sidelines and put them on the field and let them realize their potential. And I think that's what our country, our government's trying to do. And that's why when it comes to the appointments process, we're more conscious about who we're appointing. When the Prime Minister brought gender parity in 2015, it was a conscious decision to say that it's possible. Mm-hmm. People will say, well, you know, it's a pipeline issue and the talent does not exist. No, our country is full of talent. But what we have to do is be willing to actually fight our own insecurities, our own unconscious bias, and sometimes it's conscious bias. Mm-hmm. We have to actually look within and say, how do I create space? And people will say, well, there's not enough space. Yes, there is. And it's not about taking anything away. It's about creating more space.
Yeah.
Our country is massive. Look at the landmass of our country. So, of course, we have space and we have the abilities. But if you look at even rural, remote communities, and you look at what certain demographics and communities, ethnic communities go through versus others, that's where we know that these barriers exist. And sometimes, very obviously, are being put up. Yeah. And that's the problem.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I also have a similar story as being a Black Canadian, because I grew up in this city, Kitchener-Waterloo. So all of my teachers have all been white. I don't really recall ever having a person of color being my teacher. All my classmates have always been majority white. Yeah, and I don't really see much representation of Black people in higher places of power most of the time. And so, yeah, it's really important to believe in yourself and not listen to the negative stories that are out there, and like just believing in yourself that you can take up those positions of power, and to believe in yourself and that there is space for everyone if you really try hard enough.
And you know, I'll tell you, it's not just up to people like yourself and myself, right? Like, it's up to every single person to do it. And that's where, you know, when communities have come together to march because of what's been taking place in regards to systemic racism, it's actually been quite warming. But for myself, something that I've learned and I've been understanding more so because of the privilege that I have in this role and because of the supports around me, has really been about allyship is a verb. So it's great to show up and it's great to carry a sign and it's great to make a statement, but then where's the action in the spaces that each of us occupies, and how do we do that better so that people can see themselves?
Yeah.
And you know, it's great that we're still shattering glass ceilings, but like, I think about the cabinet table. We've had one Black woman as a Canadian cabinet minister, and so people will say, well, she was the first. For me, she's the only, because we haven't had a second.
True.
So we need to see a second and a third, and we need to make sure that people recognize that it's possible. And our systems also have to support those individuals to succeed.
Very true. Yeah, because sometimes the default isn't within ourselves, so you could work hard enough, but there are systems that are put in place that might hinder people from getting up there. So yeah.
And that's what I was saying. I do think sometimes intentionally barriers are being put up. And yes, we can call it up, but allyship as a verb is having other people who are seeing those same barriers be put up, calling it out as well.
True. Yeah, so...
and doing something about it.
That's true. What do we need to do as Canadians? What is already being done, and how do we move forward?
So I would say that all Canadians deserve equal opportunities to thrive, mm-hmm. no matter their origin, color, religion, language, sexuality, skin color, list goes on. And we want, I believe, be a country where each of us is lifting each other up rather than pushing people down.
Yeah.
So they say like a high tide lifts all boats. And I think we, if we actually want to be socially and economically competitive, because we are a trading nation, we should really realize and maximize the potential of our country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has to start with our relationship with Indigenous peoples. Our journey to reconciliation is not an easy one, but it has to be one that we stay committed. And we cannot have the government of Canada telling Indigenous communities how to operate. We have to create safe and brave spaces where it is nation to nation, mm-hmm. Indigenous led.
Yeah.
So we have to be mindful of who is informing us, and when it is not informed by lived experiences or by individuals from community, then we need to get back to the drawing board and make sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not mean it's somebody that the government's comfortable with. It means someone that both communities and the government can work with. And that's where consensus is not that everyone agrees. It means finding a way that we can live with to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to do. Another thing that we need to do is actually be able to acknowledge that systemic racism and discrimination exists in our country. I recognize it's a challenge and people get defensive. It's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
What it is an opportunity to actually know where we're starting and where we're going. And I think that's why even when it comes to our history with Indigenous peoples, it's important that we know the land that we're on, know that that history is not one that people are proud of,
mm-hmm.
But then what are we doing about it? Because the last thing we want to do is repeat it, because then we're part of the problem. I would rather be part of the solution. So I really want to learn about the true history of our country. I want it to be taught to me by the voices of Indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
I want to learn about the history of Black Canadians in Canada. And I want to hear it from the first people who came to Nova Scotia, from African Nova Scotians. I did not know that community has been there for 8, 9, 10 generations.
Oh, wow.
But I was a minister of diversity, inclusion, and youth. I got to go to Nova Scotia, met this beautiful woman, and just was connected to her. At that time, we could hug, so she gave me a hug. And she said that she had been here, she was the 10th generation. And I was like, whoa, that's before Confederation. And she goes, that's how long Black Canadians have been in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a history that I never learned in school. And so until it is, I think we need to make it available and accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So what can everyone do? Everyone can be part of the solution. We can look at the spaces we occupy. We can all be in it together. We can ensure that we are building back even better and consciously inclusive. Look at the decision-making table or the room you're in. Notice who is present. Notice who is not present.
Mm-hmm.
Also, be aware of comments that I believe have become okay to say. We know better. I was listening to Same Love. The song came out in 2009. I don't know if you know that song. Michael Moore, check it out. Listen to the words. And it was, I think it came out in 2009, which is 11 years ago. And if you listen to those words, you'll see terminologies and comments that used to be said then that people felt would never go away. In 2020, you don't hear those comments because we not only expect better, we demand better, and
mm-hmm.
we call it out. And I think that's where each of us has to do our part. And we don't know what we don't know. So encourage unconscious bias training, encourage anti-oppression training, encourage inclusivity training. Look at who's doing the hiring within your workplaces. Look at who's being hired. Look at who's applying. And I think we need to actually look at all those things. And I would say if you are threatened by it or concerned with it, let's create spaces where we can have respectful conversations
mm-hmm.
and help that happen. I would say really quickly, when my family was growing up, when I was growing up here in Waterloo region, my father wears a turban, and so did my uncle and my grandfather, and people just didn't understand about the culture. So what we did is we kind of opened up our doors, and we started having those conversations. They could smell the food that my mom would cook, and my mom is an amazing cook. And so we started sharing food. So in my Crescent that I still love to this day, you know, we would drop off, you know, Indian food, and then we would get back like brownies or cupcakes.
Oh, nice.
And it started being like, you know, breaking bread together to live together and then teaching each other. And we got to learn about community and other cultures. They got to learn about ours. And all of a sudden, people's shoulders came down because they knew, and they weren't living off of the stereotypes they had been taught. Mm-hmm. Racism is taught. Stereotypes are taught. Anyone who's born into this world is born full of love and care, and I would say inclusion, but we teach those stereotypes. And we also, just like we do with professions, we do, as we do with professions with gender, we do it with race as well. Like, we label certain things. No, every individual can succeed, and where there are barriers, I would hope that I can help to remove them, dismantle them, and I really am grateful to the leadership within this community that I've seen across the country that have had the courage to speak up and step up. We all have different ways of doing it, and every approach is necessary.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to answer my questions and for sharing your insight and wisdom and teaching us more about what we can do as Canadians.
And Brenda, thank you for sharing a little bit about yourself, and thank you for creating this forum. I think it's an awesome opportunity. Mm-hmm. I'll be listening as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Have a good rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, I'm Damien, one of the editors of the DCO Learning Forums podcast. Over the past year, we've been busy converting our Learning Forums series of videos into podcasts and thinking of new ways to continue delivering new and more in-depth content. We've seen the demand, and we're announcing our move to Pinecast and our new tip jar function. Please consider going to tips.pinecast.com/jar/distressandcrisisontario and donating. And in return, we'll be recording new follow-up episodes on some of our most popular topics. These will be accessible for tippers only and will help pay for travel, web hosting, etc. For the interim, you'll still be able to access existing content on both the Pinecast and Fireside feeds for free, but eventually we'll be making the switch to Pinecast. Thank you for your understanding.